Hello, and welcome to another interview from Jason's Connection. I'm Erica McIntyre, Jason's Connection's Content Director. Today, Jason Harris, founder of Jason's Connection, will be talking with Zarifa Roberson, the CEO, founder, and publisher of Ideal Magazine, and a tireless advocate for those with disabilities. Ms. Roberson herself was born with a disability, but she does not let it dictate her life.
Hi. So what is Ideal Magazine?
Well, Ideal Magazine, well, Ideal is actually an acronym for Individuals with Disabilities Expressive Out Life. And we are a publication for young people with disabilities. So Ideal encompasses a lot of different aspects of the disability community. We talk about disabilities, but we talk about the topics that people in the disability community may not want to talk about, or they feel as though that no one listens to them. We make sure they have that platform through our publication for their voice to be heard. So Ideal talks about topics like, for example, going to college for the first time as a person with a disability. What is your experience? Because going to college as a person that is non-disabled is totally different compared to someone with a disability. Or that person that is a part of a transit lifestyle. There's a lot of people in the disability community that are members of the LGBTQ community in our community, which is great because that makes our community so versatile. And then we're talking about the working professional person with a disability. How is life is with a person with a disability who is in the workforce? We hear about people with disabilities often in the news doing great things, but you really don't know of that person. You hear about more people with lower functioning people with disabilities, and that's great, but you really don't hear about the higher functioning people with disabilities like myself and others out there that are doing great things in the community. We're kind of like integrated into our lives, so we don't really have the advocacy group. Pushing our voices out there, which is fine because we can advocate for ourselves. But we're the unheard population. So we give them that platform through our publication to express their concerns and just to celebrate their life as a person with a disability.
Now, what do you consider somebody, because the terminology is always important in disabilities, and what do you consider somebody who's lower functioning and somebody who's higher functioning?
Someone that is, for example, someone that has severe mental retardation, that probably can't communicate as effectively compared to someone that has a mild mental retardation. That's what we try to identify as someone with more of a severe disability compared to someone with a higher functioning disability. Someone that has a higher functioning disability, they still need help in some of the areas, but they can communicate, they can go to work. If I need help with some of the life skills at work or at home, but they can still express themselves. So that's what we mean by high functioning and low functioning. Some people don't agree with terminology, but that's what we try to, when people like you ask me that question, that's what I try to explain to people.
Now, including having people with disabilities, you also have another niche group that you're trying to cater to. Can you explain whatever niches you're trying to hit as well as people with high functioning disabilities?
Yes. We do actually interview people with high functioning people with disabilities. For example, Achilles Hurd, who was on the cover of our magazine in our fall 2013, he has autism, but he has a mild case of autism. He actually graduated from Arcadia University right outside of Philadelphia, has a master's degree, and he works right now. And we do highlight people without disability in our publication, but they have to support or contribute to the disability community in order to be featured in a magazine. So we do have some exceptions to the rule. But that's what we mean when it comes to high-functioning people with disabilities. For example, my disability is called also Viposis Multiplex Congenia. I have when most treating physicians see me, they look at me and they're astonished because I'm walking, I'm very independent. I used to live on a third floor apartment. I drive a car with no adaptive technology or car modification. People are very shocked when they get in my car. But there's people who have the same disability that I have, and they're not as independent as I am. So they require more care. And I definitely know that I'm very blessed to have the life that I have because I've met and I've seen people with my disability. They're not as high functioning or not as independent as I am.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you also want to reach people in the cities as well. You're more for people who live in the cities and in the suburbs than necessarily people who live in the country, even though you do have an extension out to there too. Is that right?
Yes, we interview everyone. We interview people in the city. We interview people in the country. We interview people in the suburbs. This magazine is basically on my experiences as a grown up in the city of Philadelphia as a person of color with a disability. My reality was actually going outside, seeing people panhandling on the corner, and I said, wow, these are people with disabilities, or sitting at home collecting a check. And I'm like, wow, where is my reality? I know there are people out there, and then I started trying to research in my family, trying to figure out where my disability came from, and that was like a dead end. So I grew up very mainstream, so I wanted something to actually be out there that represented young people with disability, because there are other publications out there that represent people with disabilities, and they do a fantastic job, not taken away, but I didn't feel like it represented me as a young person of color with a disability, or someone living in an urban city with a disability, or someone living in the suburbs, or someone that's living in the country, because we may not go through every step of or every walk of life as the same walk of life, but we do share similar experiences when it comes to transportation and getting in and out your house or getting into public facilities that's supposed to be accommodating, but they're not accommodating to people with disabilities. So we do experience the same type of struggles all across the border when it comes to people with transportation, housing. So we can touch on people with disabilities that are living in warrior communities, because we do experience setbacks and frustration when it comes to employment opportunities for people with disabilities. But the objective goal of the magazine is to focus on the urban areas of people with disabilities. But we do reach out to people that are living in rural areas and suburban areas, and we do share their stories in the magazine as well.
Now, it seems like some of that you talked about inspired you to found the magazine. Is there anything else that, or would you like, what inspired you to found the magazine?
Oh, well, I didn't see anything. Let me take that back. When I was in high school, I went to a public high school here in Philadelphia. It's called Fields High School. It still exists to this day. And I wasn't in special education. I was in regular classes. And even though I had a physical disability, it wasn't a lot of people that I can actually connect with. It was about two or three other young ladies, and we all had physical disabilities, but we was all in different grade levels. And then being not in special education, you really didn't understand. You was trying to find out where do you fit in life. Then I went on to college, so I was really dealing with trying to fit in and being a part of all different types of groups on campus, like the NAACP or the Black Student Union, even allies, because I am bisexual. I was fitting into all these different groups, but they weren't in a group for people with disabilities. So some of the things that we shared in common when it came to my disability aspect, there wasn't nothing out there for me to actually grab onto. It wasn't until I started the magazine, and I was like, this is really, really interesting. And I started doing research, and I started to look at other magazines for people with disabilities and see what they were talking about and see what the writers were writing about in their publication. And then I said, there's nothing for people of color with disabilities, not that young person with a disability. Maybe I could start something like that. And then when I got to grad school, I put the magazine on hiatus when I went to grad school. And there was an organization, they wanted the professors talking about starting up. And I said, at that time, I didn't have a job. I was living with my cousins in Laurel, Maryland. And hey, I said, why don't I have to start up this organization on campus? And it was the Student Rehabilitation Association on campus. And it was a great organization because it was actually and actually was able to allow undergrad and graduate students with and without disabilities to be a part of the organization and to work collaboratively with the different organizations on campus and also off the campus, making a positive effect on the disability community in Baltimore. So with all that being said, that was some of the reasons why I started up the magazine, because I didn't feel like it was a niche out there for that young person with a disability that was that working professional. Because you got to understand, when you're a young person in high school with a physical disability, you're like, okay, I'm going to college, but I can read Essence, and I can read Ebony magazine, or I can read a Cosmopolitan. But what is it like for that college student with a disability to go away to campus for the first time? And they didn't have that. So that's why I started the publication, because I wanted to make sure we are that voice that's talking to the disability community.
And your quarterly magazine is printed. What makes you decide to be a print magazine in a time when there's so many online things coming about?
Well, we decided to go print because we wanted to be, I was thinking about at the time when I started the magazine back in 2004, it wasn't all going digital. It was in that way, it was going to that way of becoming digital. We wanted to have it, a printed magazine, because we feel as though it wasn't out there in the community. People, our readers can subscribe to the magazine to have it emailed to them as an online publication. So we do offer both versions of the magazine. We are hoping one day we can get into doctor's offices, in the waiting areas and doctor's offices and different special education departments, as well as the different disability-related organizations. Now, like, for example, like the state organization here in Pennsylvania called OVR, Office of Vocational Rehabilitation Services. So we will hopefully one day we'll be in all the different offices out there that can actually have a copy of IDEAL magazine in their office.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have several fixed identities, and by fixed identities, we're talking about in the sense that people have a very specific idea of what that identity means with being a woman, African American, disabled, but how do you identify and define yourself?
I just identify myself, well, I go by my name, Zarifa. So I identify myself as Zarifa, but I'm an African American woman with a disability. That's where I identify myself. Some people in the disability community don't like the word disabled, disability. It doesn't really bother me. As long as people call me by my name, I can respond.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think we live in a world right now that embraces so many identities and so many different cultures, and that's the beautiful thing about living in today's society. We're all have these different identities that we can actually go by, and we have the option, we have the choices to be identified how we want to be identified. Because a couple of years ago, about 30 years ago, the world was so much a different place when it came to people that was a part of the Black community or the African American community or being a woman or being a part of the LGBTQ community. So even people with disabilities are still going and on in our community trying to figure out what is the proper term to call our community, because our community is so diverse and unique, and that's one thing, that's the beautiful thing that I love about our community. So mm-hmm. we can identify by what we want to identify ourselves by. So if you just call me Zarifa, I'm okay with that. So mm-hmm. I'm okay with calling me as Zarifa. So it's no, I know I'm an African American with a disability, but if you call me Zarifa, I'm okay with that.
Mm. I mean, I think you bring up a good point, too. As another high-functioning person with a disability, some of it, too, is having being able to create your own narrative that sort of tells your story, too, because there is not as much, at least, they're starting to become more, but there hasn't been as much focusing on people who are high-functioning in their own personal experiences. Are there particular challenges of being African American or a woman or somebody with a disability that you faced or that you noticed that other people faced? Or?
Yes. Yeah, that is a great question. Yes. We have the discussion all the time within the magazine about when it comes to white people with disabilities compared to people of color with a disability. We have it's a whole different world for us. Mm-hmm. I'm reminded every day that I'm an African-American woman, but I have a disability on top of that. Most people think they see the physical disability, they assume that something intellectually is wrong with me, not until I start speaking. If you don't know me personally, you're going to think I have something intellectually wrong with me. It's been many a times that I have gone into interviews and people thought I was there for a custodian job, and I wasn't there for a custodian job. I was there for a case coordinator job. So it's so much stigma. And then the agency that I was working for at the time, and I kind of put two and two together, most of the people with a disability, intellectual or physical disability, they did janitorial work. So it was just that stigma that they were just used to seeing people with disability doing a blue-collar job compared to a white-collar job. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of stigma that comes in play when it comes to people with disabilities, especially when it comes to people of color with disabilities. And I feel like every time I step out my house, I got to prove myself each and every day about who I am as a person, because society has these stigmas, mostly negative stigmas associated to people with disabilities, and you put a color into it, it's even worse. So I mm-hmm. have to continue to educate people, bring awareness to people about who I am and who my community is as well. Because, for example, someone would say, oh, my cousin has cerebral palsy. And they think the person sitting next to them may have shared with them they have cerebral palsy, and they meet their cousin, and their cousin is not as independent as they are. So people have this one image of someone that they met that have this certain disability, and they may just think everyone that has that same disability is like their cousin. So this is the mindset that we're in, and we just need to educate and bring more awareness about disabilities, and we really, really should have a conversation about people of color with disabilities, because it's a totally different perspective when your race is involved when it comes to your disability.
Oh, yeah, totally. We talked actually to somebody named Gloria Walker, who started Urbanami. She does mental health in the inner city, and I was wondering, why do you think that developmental or invisible disabilities or even mental health issues are talked about less in the African American community, or are they? Is that just something that we from the outside think that's not talked about but is talked about?
It's a stigma that's associated within the African-American community. For example, my mom did not know anyone with a disability until she had me. She heard about mm-hmm. people with disabilities, but it wasn't really talked about. So, and I think that stigma still exists to today. For example, I was just on Advocacy Day with the Sickle Cell Chapter here in Philadelphia. We went to Harrisburg, which we had a wonderful time, a great experience. And this was after lunch. We ate our lunch in one building. We walked across the street to the back to the main building to begin our afternoon presentation and speaking to our politicians. And on our way back in, they said, no, we couldn't enter the door because there were so many of us. But I'm looking at the people that I'm with. We're all people with disabilities, but remind you, sickle cell. Majority of people that have sickle cell disease are hidden disabilities. So they didn't understand this is an organization for people with disabilities. So we could have just went in that door, but since we're not, I wasn't in front of the pack, I was in the middle of the pack, and since they didn't see the physical disability, they assumed, oh, they're helping us to walk around the corner, which I have a physical disability. I don't have sickle cell. I was very upset, to say the least. I was very upset because I'm like, this is a disability-related organization. You know, we should not have to walk around to the front of the building. I don't care if it is. If majority of the people in the organization, majority of people of the community have, they're visible, they don't have a physical element to go with their invisible disability, but we shouldn't have to walk around in the hot sun. So that having a hidden disability is more, in one hand, it's a good thing in the African-American community because no one knows that you're dealing with this disability. But on the other hand, it's taboo because people don't think you're sick or people don't think you're going through anything. So you have me who has a physical disability, so people are constantly asking me, are you okay? Do you need some water? Do you need to sit? And where there's people in the disability community that are African American as well, of all colors as well, they don't get the same attention because their disability is hidden. Unless it's a close family member or a family friend that's constantly checking up on this person or really understands their disability, they don't really get the same treatment. So there's still a lot of education that needs to go on with when it comes to people of color with disability, because one minute we don't want to know, next minute people forget that we have a disability. I even had to tell my own mother at times, my disability is called arthrogryposis multiplex congenita. It's a form of arthritis. Anytime when you have arthritis, some of the symptoms are fatigue. You get tired. I have to pace myself because I get tired. And that's just the nature of the game. So that's what I have to say about that question. Sorry, I was a little long-winded, but.
No, it's really good. We want people to be able to explain their answers, and you have time to. So you've worked with the NAACP, sorry, for an organization that is in much of the news around the concept, the controversy around Rachel Dozell. As somebody who used to work there, how do you feel about that in around identities of being black or white and if they can be sort of mixed together, if it's more concrete?
Well, I didn't actually work at the NAACP. I was a chartering member on my campus of the NAACP at Millersville University. I was one of the chartering members of that chapter at my alumni, my undergrad. That's fine. But people have mixed feelings about it. Me personally, I see that she lied about her race, but she was doing a good job as the president of the Washington chapter. So it's not based on race. It's based on how well the person can do the job. And as a person with a disability, that's what I want people to look at me as, my credentials and how well I can do the job. So it's never based on race. It's all about how well you can do the job. Because if I was in that situation, I would want someone to look at, don't look at my disability, look at my work ethic, look at my credentials, look at well I can perform the task. That's why you hired me, to get the job done.
That's a really good point. I mean, you've also worked in Baltimore, and in light of certain things have gone up, how do you feel about sort of tensions that are going on right now between police or different, even with disabilities, there's different caregivers and authority figures in different groups?
And it's interesting that you mentioned that. We're actually going to be having a panel discussion. Well, not a panel discussion. We're going to have an emergency preparedness program for people with disabilities. We're going to have a one with the city fire department, and I told them, Lieutenant Brown, to see if we can get in touch with the Philadelphia police, because we understand people with disabilities, black and white, all colors, are having a difficult time telling the police what's going on, and sometimes they may think the person is resisting arrest or whatever may have you. They're just not culturally understanding that this person is deaf, or this person's having a stroke, or this person's having an epileptic seizure. So there's a lot of education that needs to be going on, and I feel bad for what happened in Baltimore. I lived in Baltimore for 6 years of my life, so Baltimore has a big place in my heart. I've got my master's degree from Baltimore, from Coppin State University in Baltimore. So it just needs a lot of education, a lot of awareness, and I think because our history, being black and having the history of the police doing things to us in our history, it actually happened in my family. A family member has died in the custody of police. So our history has taught us not to really fully trust them because of what has happened in our history. So, and then you have a disability, and I have sat on in a couple of different groups here in Philadelphia. Some had black, some had white, some had all kinds of people, and the police is not understanding disabilities as a whole. So there needs to be some education and some awareness. So when they see someone that is not responding, doesn't mean that they're resisting. They may be going to something else, and people need to be properly trained on how to respond before reacting all the time. So I think that's a great question, because I was just talking to Lieutenant Brown last week, and we're going to try to get something in the works for October. I don't know if you know this, is National Disability Employment Awareness Month. We're going to have that as well as Fire Prevention Awareness Month. So we're going to have this discussion in October, because that'll be great to have both of this emergency preparedness and getting educated about what police need to say when it comes to people with disabilities when they're in a situation that they may not be responding well to. So we need to have these discussions.
I think that's really important. Thank you for answering this. Now, I know you focus this probably on your summer edition, but it's the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disability Act. How far do you think in this year since it was enacted? How far do you think we've come, and where do you think we should go from here?
Oh, my gosh. The Americans with Disabilities Act, I'm so excited about this wonderful milestone in our community. I'm excited because I've seen the progress. I've seen that it has made a lot of people's life a little bit more easy to get around in our community. But there's still a lot of work that needs to be done with the ADA and with disabilities rights and advocacy as a whole. So I'm happy that we are celebrating this milestone. but I'm still fighting to get some of our rights and to get some of our rights as people with disabilities to the platform that we needed it. We need them to go to the platform, because a lot of our rights and our advocacy groups are doing an amazing job, but it's one thing about the disability community, let me back it on up. Our community is whole, but it's separate. For example, the sickle cell community is over here. The blind community is over here. The deaf community is over here. The cerebral palsy community is over here. So it's great that everyone has all in their own communities, but it kind of takes a disadvantage. Because something may that affects the sickle cell community may not affect the deaf community. So people may say, oh, that doesn't affect my community, but it affects your community. So why am I standing for your cause? Because we have nothing to do with that community, because we're over here. You see what I'm saying? And it gets a little bit more separate than more of, let's all just stand together, because you never know. Someone that you know, that you may know, may be affected with sickle cell. They don't think like that. They think about, my primary disability is not sickle cell, it's epilepsy or deaf or what may have you. I'm not going to fight for that cause, because that's something that doesn't affect me personally. But not thinking that, hey, you never know. I may have a child with sickle cell, or one of my best friends may have a child with sickle cell. So let me go ahead and just fight for this, because this is going to help. It's going to benefit the disability community as a whole. So,
yes, and I definitely, oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So that's probably one of the ways that how the ADA is not benefiting us, because we don't stand as a whole on different issues when it comes to affecting the disability community as a whole. You have a small group. Sorry.
How do you mean, how do you expect that to work? Because that's not something the ADA can necessarily legislate. That's something that these different groups have to come together, such as autism and spinal bifida and all these different organizations come together and sort of see that they're fighting for similar causes rather than government legislation. So how do you hope to get these different organizations to come together?
If one person can do it, I think we all can do it. I know I'm asking for a lot, because I don't have epilepsy, but I'm at a support group meeting for people with epilepsy. I don't have sickle cell. I could have said no. I don't want to go to advocacy day, but my best friend has sickle cell. I have a rare disability called orthogryposis multiplex congenitus. You say that a couple of times and ask me, what? But I tried to stand together, because I say it may not affect me personally, but it's someone that's probably close to me that's affected by this disability. And I just think we just need to stop, just get out the mindset of just thinking about, oh, it doesn't affect me personally. And I understand what you said, and I agree with you. It takes these different groups to do the advocacy work for themselves, and you know the ADA doesn't stand, it won't benefit that in that way, but if we just stand together for one or two different causes, it would just unify our community so much bigger.
Well, I think there are issues, and you've touched on them in this interview, that do go across every disability, major, minor. I mean, I think one of them that you talked about really big is jobs. I think disability communities are one of the most disproportionate in having jobs, whether it's somebody with autism or somebody with a physical disability. You tend to either be underemployed or not employed at all.
Exactly. And another big issue here in Philadelphia we have is our public transportation. Our buses are are very handicapped accessible, but when it comes to the trains, they're not as handicapped accessible. So that's a big gripe I had when I was catching the bus, and I'm not even catching the bus now, like catching public transportation now. I still have a problem with that because I'm like, it's 2015. The bus, the trains need to be handicap accessible. I spoke about this in my CEO page and it's on my district. I live in an area that in order for me to get to the handicap accessible train station that is closest to me, I had to take 3 buses because the closest
wow.
one to me is not handicap accessible, which requires 1
mm.
bus. So that's a problem. And I know
well,
the Mayor's Commission on People with Disability understands it. And they can't handle everything because of the small office. It's a very small office. So, and they don't have the right to hire people. The mayor has the right to say, we need to accommodate this office because there's only 2 or 3 people that handle all the Philadelphians with disabilities in the entire city. This is a big city. It's not a small city. So that's a big problem with me. But just to let you know, we do have handicap accessible taxicab, which is great. Uber is handicap accessible as well. But the only thing about it, when you're looking at the disability community, a lot of us are on a fixed income. So we may can't afford a handicap accessible taxi services. We may have to get 3 buses to get to a handicap accessible train station. So these are some of the ways that I see that the ADA is great. It has done a lot for the disability community, but there's still so much that needs to happen with the ADA, get more accessible for people with disability.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think that's a really good point. So what are your goals for yourself and Ideal Magazine, and where would you like to see the different, either the African-American community, the American community, the disability community in the future?
Oh, that's a great question. Where I see myself in the next 5 years, I always say I want to be the next Oprah for the disability community, because I always say you got to speak it into existence in order to be Oprah Winfrey. But my name will be Zarifa Robertson. So my name will be the next Oprah when people open up my publication. I would love for my publication to be global, to be in different languages across the globe. As far as the American, African American, and disabled community, I would love for us to keep on growing and keep on becoming educated, keep on spreading awareness as years come by, as life goes on. So that's what I would love for our communities to grow. I would love for all our communities to grow together.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
One other thing, check out our amazing web page, our website. That's www.itsanidealworld.com. And we are having a summer subscription campaign kicking off next month in July. And just look for me everywhere. We're having a fashion show for Disability Awareness Month next March. In Philadelphia, this is the first time that we are actually having a fashion show for people with disabilities, featuring models with disabilities and fashion designers for disabilities. So it's all going to be disability related. So we would love for y'all support. We love for everyone's support. So we're just doing bigger and better things. But thank you for the opportunity for coming on your show today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining.